You're listening to IQVIA Business Insights, a series of discussions about some of the biggest issues and questions facing our global healthcare ecosystem and how the integration of data, scientific expertise, technology, and analytics can drive business and patient outcomes forward.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the IQVIA MedTech Business Insights podcast. My name is Michaela Miller. I'm the leader of IQVIA's MedTech Technology and Analytics practice in the U.S., and it is my pleasure to welcome Lena Czajorski, co-founder and VP of Pair Innovation at Alpha 10, to today's episode. And we're going to dive into the topic of value-based pricing in vitro diagnostics. Hello, Lena.
Hi, Michaela. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. So to kick us off, can I ask you to quickly introduce yourself and share your background a little bit?
Sure. So Lena Czajorski, I'm the co-founder and vice president of Pair Innovation at Alva 10, like you said. I have a math background academically, mathematics and biology, but I've actually spent my career in the diagnostics industry. You know, I started in this industry thinking it was kind of a math problem I wanted to solve, to be honest. When I started solving that math problem, I saw so many poorly constructed equations that I decided to stay and see what I can do to really change the way that reimbursement works, because I think that misaligned financial incentives are a huge aspect of what is hurting and killing us in the U.S. healthcare system. So I work on diagnostic reimbursement. That's what I've been doing in my career. I co-founded this company with Hannah Mamushka, our CEO, about 6 years ago, because we were really looking to construct a world and a way in which payers in the diagnostic industry could work together to develop really valuable tests and have those valuable tests be paid at value-based reimbursement rates, which is very different from what's happening today. Yeah. So hopefully that helps explain a little bit about me and starts to talk about the company we built.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Lena. And you just mentioned, right, it is a challenge. What we've seen so far in terms of value-based pricing is that it's become widely accepted for pharmaceuticals, but we don't yet have those standard mechanisms in place to reward that clinical value for IVDs, right? We have an advanced laboratory diagnostic test classification under PAMA, for which higher reimbursement may be available, but only very specific tests qualify, right? So examples of success for VBP for truly regulated IVDs remain few. I know we have talked about that before. Many are focused on oncology. It's sort of a prime area of focus for diagnostic companies, but consistent, successful engagement with payers has remained a challenge, right? And I would love for you to share your experience and talk a little bit about how you define the problem that we're facing, right? What is this issue that is underlying this challenge? We always hear that statistic that 70% of therapeutic treatment is driven by diagnostic testing, yet only a relatively small percentage of healthcare spending goes to diagnostics, right? We're all familiar with this. Mm-hmm. But share with us how you really see this problem from your perspective.
Yeah, well, the way you outlined it, Michaela, is exactly right. And frankly, it's the reason that we started the company. Me with my diagnostic reimbursement expertise and Hannah with her scientific and clinical expertise, we have a great founding team here at Alva, all of whom have spent years in the diagnostic industry experiencing the very problem that you just said, but from multiple perspectives. And the fundamental problem is that the U.S. healthcare system does not value diagnosis and prevention. It values treatment. And what that means is that the actuarial organizations, the insurance companies that pay for our healthcare, are totally set up to think about and evaluate drugs, and they are not set up to think about and evaluate diagnosis and prevention. And you can see that even in the 12-month actuarial cycle, right? Mm-hmm. This is everywhere. So I think that creates an underlying environment where diagnostics cannot succeed. And then on the other side, to sort of add to that, you've got the problem that a lot of the diagnostics that we're trying to obtain value for, when you think about these IVD manufacturers today, they're developing molecular diagnostics.
Yeah.
Well, molecular diagnostics are a totally new industry, sub-industry. Molecular medicine, as we know, the diagnostic industry has really been alive and thriving for the 20, 30 years since the Human Genome Project, right? So this isn't in medical textbooks. This isn't in pharmacy textbooks. Our healthcare and medicine ecosystem is not really set up to think about this. So now you've got these molecular diagnostics crashing into the system that was never meant to value them. And that is an enormous problem. And why is that a problem? It's a problem because the real-world efficacy rates of drugs and interventions are much lower than their package insert information claims. And unless you have a suite of diagnostic solutions that can balance the need for a drug or the need to keep taking a drug, you're going to keep overspending and overutilizing on therapeutics and interventions because you don't have diagnostics to guide that journey and make that journey more cost efficient. And that is why we are at, you know, level one threat. We have got to, as a healthcare system, create a robust ecosystem for developing and valuing diagnostics, because this is out of control on the therapeutic side. Mm.
So let me ask you then, logical next question, right? How do we change then? What does industry need to change, or how do we unlock the reimbursement piece for diagnostics?
So, and that's a great question. So I would say it's a couple things. First of all, and part of this is sort of the way that we built and constructed our company, right? When we started Alva 10, the way that we went about it was we constructed a framework of partnership, a contractual framework that essentially enables us to sit between the payer industry and the diagnostic industry, identify what the payers need to have developed, and then go develop that in the industry. That is how we are sitting and translating, right? What is the economic customer, the payer need? And then the diagnostic industry, what is the technical capability for the industry to build it and deliver it? Now, on the diagnostic company side, I would say that first of all, diagnostic companies don't, today, they don't really do a good job of understanding what the payer needs are. They develop tests in a silo. This has historically always been true, right? They develop the test, they spend all the money, they get the CPT code, they go out, they develop a dossier, and then they turn to their customer and they say, can you please pay for this diagnostic? Look how valuable it is. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the payer is not set up to receive the value proposition, agree with the value proposition. Maybe they disagree with the evidence, right? It's like two ships passing the night from the perspective of a conversation, and it creates a very adversarial relationship. Because then the next thing the diagnostic company does is they start to submit claims, right? They start to get the physicians to start pushing on the payers. So that is what the industry does. And a lot of that, I would say, stems from the key problem of they're not developing tests that are inherently valuable to payers. So then they have to do a lot of things to get those claims paid because the payer does not inherently have a financial or clinical incentive to cover their product.
Interesting. And you just mentioned the order of the historical path, right? Can you share an example of working with the payer to ensure you have that clinical utility sign off, right? Because that's yep. absolutely critical. Have you seen a collaboration in your business where that's worked really well, a collaboration between payers and IVD manufacturers?
Absolutely. And I'll use this is not an IVD manufacturer, but they are a CLIA lab and now a well-known company in the space. I can share the example of Cypher Medicine that had been a partner to us for years. We worked together for almost 4 years. And that was a very interesting story. So Cypher Medicine had and has a phenomenal technology that enables them to stratify patients for response and non-response to a variety of drugs. And one of the big things that we started doing was working with payers to understand what are your key needs and where exactly can we develop diagnostics for you. One of the biggest things that payers said to us was, we really need diagnostic to decrease anti-TNF utilization. Well, when you looked at that, what you saw was that rheumatoid arthritis was an enormous need within that space. Why? Because 90% of the time, if somebody has rheumatoid arthritis and they go on a specialty drug, that specialty drug is going to be an anti-TNF drug like Humira or Enbrel. 90% of the time, they have formulary dominance. Here's the problem. Those drugs only work 36% of the time in rheumatoid arthritis. So you can see what's happening, right? We're paying for a lot of drug that's not working. So we worked with the payers, and one of the things that the payers felt very strongly about is that they did not want a test that was going to tell them that the patient would respond to an anti-TNF. Why? Because they already give that drug 90% of the time first line, right? If I tell you you're 65% likely to respond to Humira, but you are going to go on Humira anyway, I have provided accurate information, but not clinically useful information, right? So that is why the PrismRA test is a non-response test. That test is 95% accurate in telling you that you will not respond to anti-TNF drugs, because that allows the payers to say, okay, this is what I was going to do, but I'm not going to do that anymore because I've got very accurate information saying that that patient's not going to respond to that drug class. That was always the intention with that diagnostic. And that's why that test was developed with the clinical utility it was developed with. And actually after that, as the test became validated, payers invested in Cypher Medicine. Cypher Medicine took money from Optum Ventures, from Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina, Echo Health Ventures. Right. This is one of the first times that payer VCs were investing in a diagnostic company. Yeah. Why? Because this diagnostic company was developed with a totally different clinical utility thesis. The way that those tests are developed are, it's a payer first approach. And we're very proud of that. I know Cypher is very proud of that. It represents a totally different way of developing diagnostics.
Yeah. So payer first approach. So what does industry need to do to develop clinically useful tests? How do they approach it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say, first of all, you need to start to develop an understanding, or you need to partner to develop an understanding of where the money is being spent and overspent on the payer side. You need to become fluent in understanding what the drug pipelines are. You need to understand what drugs are coming out. You need to understand what drugs don't work. You need to understand what procedures are hugely inaccurate or overutilized, right? Because these, you also need to think about where disease starts and are we good at catching disease where it starts, right? These are all sort of healthcare journeys that you can imagine. Like if you don't have the right diagnostic information along that journey, your journey is going to be long, it's going to be expensive, and it's going to be filled with probably a lot of healthcare utilization that you might not have needed. So I would say, first of all, starting with that framework. And secondly, and I don't know sort of how specifically you're looking for information, but I would say there's a variety of areas, and there's two in particular that I can think of where it's just, again, this is like a blue ocean of opportunity. And I think the diagnostic industry has largely ignored it, which is amazing to me.
And which ones are those? I was just going to ask you, what are those unmet
what are needs those secret
that payers
blue ocean
are still
areas?
Asking for? Yeah.
Exactly. So, and actually, our CEO actually wrote a paper on this that just describes this, I think, so elegantly and simply. But the two areas are NASH and Alzheimer's disease. So the problems are in some ways unique, in some ways they're very similar. So Alzheimer's is a disease where obviously, you know, we've been looking for drugs for a long time. The drug that we have isn't very efficacious, but Alzheimer's today, we don't have diagnostics to determine Alzheimer's disease. We don't have diagnostics to diagnose it. So that's a little bit of a chicken and an egg situation, where historically payers have looked at the diagnostic to say, well, do you have clinical utility? What are you doing with respect to the treatment, right? Well, if there's not a lot of drugs, you can imagine how you might not have a lot of clinical utility, because if I tell someone they have Alzheimer's and there's nothing to do about it, what's the value? But at the same time, these drugs are all targeted therapies. They work along specific mechanisms of action. You need to be able to diagnose the disease, stratify the disease, exactly as we do in oncology, right? You don't just have lung cancer today, right? You have EGFR positive lung cancer, so on and so forth. It's exactly the same thing. So I would say that, and NASH is a very different situation, but that is a liver disease that is really a silent liver disease because it's very difficult to diagnose. The diagnosis of NASH is a large gauge needle to your side, which, as you can imagine, not a lot of people are going to sign up for. So the problem with NASH is by the time you identify you have this liver disease, it's too late. Well, there are a host of drugs that are in pipeline today to help solve the NASH problem. But how do you think that's going to go if you can't really diagnose NASH? At least you can't do it non-invasively. You can't stage it, right? Yeah. What does that mean? That means that these drugs are going to be going after patients that have pre-NASH, if you will, right? Well, that's a large patient population pre-NASH. You can back that all the way up to the diabetic population in the US, even the pre-diabetic population in the US.
Interesting. Yeah.
So do you see the problem on the Alzheimer's side? You know, we need diagnostics to stratify the population because then we can start getting drugs that are at least able to target a portion of the population.
Yeah.
On the NASH side, we need diagnostics to stem the flow and overutilization of these drugs that are going to be coming on the market targeting, as you can imagine, anybody whose symptoms fit the profile.
Yeah.
So this is how diagnostic companies need to be thinking about value.
Oh, that's really interesting. I appreciate that. And so you've given us, and unfortunately, we're already coming up to the end of our discussion, but you've given us sort of the approach. You've given us a couple of examples. You've reiterated the payer-first mindset and also some areas of opportunity and unmet need that those payers are looking for. If we look at the diagnostic manufacturers and how they have engaged with the payers at a very tactical level, right, messaging their clinical utility and value, it's my understanding that's been a challenge too, right? They're not communicating or not speaking the same language. Can you talk a little bit about those common struggles that you have seen between manufacturers and in the process of engaging with payers?
Definitely. I would say, I mean, first of all, like we talked about, it's the clinical utility. If the clinical utility isn't there, the story is going to be lackluster by definition. Mm. But then secondly is really that diagnostic companies do not do a good job of telling their value story. They do not speak in the language of the payer. They speak more in the language of the clinician because that is who they sell to. But the actuarial entity, the US insurance company, is more interested in how many tests are going to go out the door for which patient population, cost savings in terms of per member per month, what are the key levers, how do you think about those levers, right? How does the evidence work? Is there a real world evidence plan? These are the things that the payer looks for. And I hear a lot of diagnostic stories that talk about the value of knowing. There is certainly a value of knowing, but you need to be able to describe that in terms that the payer values, and that has been lacking.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Lena. I'm so grateful for you sharing your insights with us. You've just laid out a very different model and approach to assay development, right? In order to secure high reimbursement, one that really starts with understanding the payer's most significant risks and problems, and also this emphasis on testing for drug effectiveness, right, to reduce costs in the healthcare system, and which is, as we all know, one key aspect of personalized healthcare. So very interesting, really grateful for your time, for your insights. I wish we could talk a little bit longer. I do want to direct folks to your paper, the papers that you referenced later on. So we will be sharing those links in our postings. Thank you again for your insights. I wish you continued success with your partnerships between payers and industry going forward. It's been a pleasure to host this discussion. I thank everybody for joining in and listening, and hopefully you were able to take away some key learnings And please do join us again next time. Thank you, Lena. Thanks again for joining. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Michaela. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this and other topics facing healthcare ecosystems around the world, visit IQVIA.com.